This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Welcome to episode 103 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest today currently holds the record for most appearances on this show in the shortest amount of time, but you won't hear me complaining about that. She is the smart and lovely Hallie Santo. Hello.
Hey, Erin. Good to be back.
Yeah, I feel like you were just here.
I know.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for agreeing to come back on and talk about Khans of Tarkir with me.
Oh, yeah. Well, the last set review was a ton of fun, so I was excited to do it again.
And I have to say, you are certainly one of my most prepared guests. I think every time I've had you on and I always ask you if you're ready, you're like, yep, I've got, you know, X amount of notes ready. And I love that.
Thanks.
I think you're actually more prepared than I am right now. So if this goes south, you're going to need to take over and be the host. I hope you don't mind.
All right. It's a lot of responsibility, but I'll try my best.
Well, I'm sure you will do a great job. So I recently heard about some news on your end. I understand that you and your longtime boyfriend recently took the very big step of adopting.
Yes, a puppy, actually.
Oh, a puppy. Okay, okay.
Yeah. So he is a Pembroke Welsh Corgi. His name is Kirby.
Okay.
We had adopted him from a friend of a friend whose corgi recently had puppies. And we brought him home last Tuesday, and he's been acclimating really well. We've had a bunch of people over to meet him, and he's just been a big hit mm-hmm. among our friends.
Mm-hmm. Now, what made you decide to take the step and adopt a dog?
I mean, we had been talking about it for a while. Like, since pretty much the night that Robert and I started dating, we had been talking about how much we love corgis and how much we wanted one. And it was a little sudden, I admit. Like, we thought it was going to be a little further down the road, but we felt like we were prepared. Like, I work from home. I do a lot of writing from home. And so I could stay home and take care of him during the day. And that was part of what prompted the decision. Like, at least we were in a position where we could take care of him and raise him properly. And the opportunity just presented itself. So we sort of jumped in, and now we have an adorable little furball living with us.
I know that I joked earlier in the show about, you know, the comparisons to adopting a child, but, you know, if I didn't know any better, I would swear you were talking about a child. Like, I was reading all of the things you had to go through to adopt Kirby, and right. It almost sounds like you were adopting a kid. Like, it sounded like you were being screened, and you had to make sure that you got along with him, and it was very strange.
Yeah, there was definitely an adoption process where, like, we had to answer a questionnaire, and then we had a Skype interview with his mother's owners. Even like throughout the process of like figuring out which puppy was going to be ours, it seemed like they were doing a little bit of matchmaking where there were six puppies in the litter and they were trying to match the puppies with the humans that they felt would best get along with them. And so I ended up with the puppy who was very like self-sufficient and like a little bit overachieving, mm-hmm. Which I don't know, I felt like was a good fit for me.
It's a good fit. Is it anything like having a child in the sense, like, is Kirby keeping you up at night? Is he behaving himself? I understand you said you had to stay home a little bit because you couldn't really leave him alone at home.
Yeah, I've been a little bit of a hermit for the past week and a half, but he's gradually becoming a little more independent every day. He's actually been sleeping through the night fairly well. The only little issue with him is that, like, he's a puppy. He thinks the whole world is his chew toy right now. So he just wants to nibble on everything. And we're working on setting some boundaries. But other than that, like, he's just been fantastic, like, really well behaved and really pleasant to live with.
Mm-hmm. My friend Kate recently got herself a wiener dog, and she named her dog Olivia Valderan.
Yeah, and I saw her on Twitter.
Yeah, and she's turned into, you know, going back to the babies versus dogs metaphor, she's turned into one of those parents who can only talk about her dog. Like, I will try to IM her, and I'll be like, you know, hey, Kate, I got some really great judge gossip for you. And she's like, did you see what Olivia did? She's so cute. left. And like, it's like, okay, can we go back to talking about this now? And then I painted her nails and I bought her a little dress. And it's just like, yep, you're one of those parents. So yeah. And it's okay. It's cute. But it's kind of like when my friend Jen had her baby, it was all she could talk about. And now that you guys have dogs, it's all you can talk about. So it's very similar.
Yeah, we're trying to keep a balance there.
Okay. Because if you get too far, you know, I'll tell you. I'll be like, Hallie, we get it. You've got a dog. You love him. Let's move on. I felt really bad that I couldn't come see you this past weekend because you were definitely high on my list of people that I wanted to see.
Yeah, but we did get to see you on the Community Cup, though, which was cool.
Oh, my goodness. I finally watched the footage today, and, like, they just got me from, like, really bad angles. They made me look like Phyllis Diller in the interview.
I thought you looked great. I thought your hair looked great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I just kind of watched a little bit and cringed, and I was like, couldn't you guys have used, like, natural lighting? Like, I'm such a diva, but yeah, I was at the Community Cup. Mm-hmm. We won. Which
yeah.
Was huge. I personally dominated my own event, the Iron Root Chef.
Yeah, my friend Kale actually came over because she's really into corgis. Mm-hmm. So she was visiting, and we were like, "Hey, let's watch the Community Cup." And so we were like watching. That was like around the time that the Iron Root Chef deck building was starting. Mm-hmm. So we were just like watching you build your deck, and we were like, "That looks pretty good. Like she could take this event." And then you took the event.
The whole experience was super crazy. And I know when all was said and done, I did kind of feel like I didn't do enough. And I felt like I didn't contribute enough because outside of that event, I didn't do very well. And a lot of my teammates were like consistently good, or they were like just average. You know what I mean? Like there was really nobody on my team that just 0-3'd as much as I did. And when we won, there was definitely this feeling of, oh, I only won the Iron Root Chef, and I felt kind of crummy for a little while. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I did need a little bit of a pick me up from my friends that were like, "Bitch, you 3-0'd. You got perfect flavors. Shut up." And even Scotty Mack, like there was a moment where I reached out to Scotty and I was like, and I normally wouldn't do this, but just to show you how comfortable I felt with my team, mm-hmm. I was like, you know, Scotty, I'm feeling like I really didn't do much and I'm kind of feeling like dead weight here. So can you help me out here? And Scotty was like, you did what you needed to do. You did a great job. Don't think that. And even the next day when we went to breakfast, he pulled out his iPad and he's like, here, he's like, look at the points, look at where you are. He's like, I don't want to hear that anymore. And everybody on my team was so awesome. I did not expect this to go as well as it did. And I still miss them. We still talk in our Facebook group. We still find pictures of each other that we took from the event. And I just had no idea I would get as attached to those people as I did. I cried my last night there.
Yeah,
it was beautiful. And I just can't thank them enough for inviting me. So
yeah, it sounds like a really awesome experience. Like that's something that I would aspire to do at some point in my Magic career too, just because it sounds like so much fun.
It is. And like I said, I went into it thinking it was going to be like 75% business and like 25% pleasure. And mm-hmm. it ended up being the opposite. Like nobody I was on a team with, there was no negativity there. We had no drama. There was no tension. There was never any pressure of don't fuck this up. We all went into it with really good attitudes. And if we happened to win, that was okay too. But I never felt like you've got to do this, don't suck, or anything like that. It was just a 100% positive experience. And if you ever get a chance, do it. Because I really do love those people. And I met some really great people. And I even changed my opinions on certain people. Like, for example, 2 weeks before the event, I had made a comment about Day 9. Because they do promote him pretty aggressively. And I remember making a comment on Twitter going, why is he famous? Why are they shoving him down our throats? I don't get it. And after spending like a good 5 days with him, I get it. Like he's got the star power and the star quality that not every gamer has. And he's genuinely funny. He's genuinely nice. I felt like I related to him. Like we all related to each other in terms of like the fame that we all have. Quote unquote, and he gets it more than anybody. And, you know, it's just really nice to have somebody to relate to. And I definitely changed my opinion of him after the event where I was like, all right, I get it. I get why you have 180,000 followers. I get why you're a big deal. Bow down.
he was actually one of the most amusing people to watch during the coverage, just because I didn't realize that he would do his whole Spellslinger shtick while he was playing Magic Online with people.
Yeah.
Like there was one point where like I was watching him play against Helene and he was doing the whole like prepare the attack, send the attack thing. It was hilarious.
Yeah, it was super lovely. And the thing I found most interesting, and I don't know if you can relate to this, because I know we have a lot of mutual friends, but when you party with wizards, the craziest thing about the whole experience is that money is just not a thing to them. Like, I remember when Trick invited me, he was like, can you be here next week? And I was like, I don't know if I can afford a plane ticket. And he's like, we've got that. And I was like, well, I don't know if I can afford a hotel. We've got that too. And like, and you know, things would come up. Like, we went on the Ride the Ducks tour. They paid for that. And that's not cheap when you have 9, 10, 15 people going.
Right.
And then we went to Card Kingdom. Everything was on their tab. It's like water to them. Like, it's just money, whatever. And then we went to karaoke the night that we won, and Helene was planning a party because the karaoke place didn't have food. So we go to this place called Fred Meyer's or Tom Meyer's.
I have no idea.
Okay, it's like a Seattle exclusive store. And Helene was like, we need to get beer and we need to get chips. And I'm like, okay. That's my Helene impression, by the way. So I grab two bottles of soda. And she's like, we need to get more. Do you know how many people are coming? And I'm like, okay. So I grab two more bottles. And then Helene grabs eight. And I'm like, how much is this? Okay. And then we get to the beer aisle. And I'm thinking Helene grabs a 12-pack. I'm like, okay, she's going to grab a 12. She grabs two more 12-packs. We go get pita chips. She doesn't just get one bag of pita chips. She gets six bags of pita chips. Like, I'm the one who's like calculating all the costs in my head going, Helene, this is going to $3 a bag at eight, that $25 for chips. We can't do this. And we get to the front of the, we finally get to the cash register. She just whips out the Hasbro card. And then she says the cutest thing. So after she rings it up and it's like $300 worth of snacks, she swipes it through the machine and she looks at me and she goes, I love when you say approved. As if the Hasbro card is going to say declined. I'm like, come on, Helene. So, but it's just crazy that just money's not an issue. And then we were karaokeing and we were only supposed to have the room until 11 p.m. And Helene is like, if you guys want, I could reserve the room for longer. And that's not cheap either. So she's willing to, like, you know, again, it's just not an issue. And that was something that we thought about. We were like, well, that's going to be a little expensive, Helene. We don't know if we want to do that to you. And she just didn't even, do you want me to stay in the room? Like, it just didn't even factor into her. Yeah. And that's just so crazy that you can be somewhere where that's just not a factor. It's just whatever, you know?
Right. That's really generous of them to.
Yeah.
To go the extra mile for you guys.
Yeah, it's we did feel a little bad though. We were like, God, I should give her a little something, you know. But everybody was very sweet. Wizards definitely rolled out the red carpet for us, and my team was awesome, and it was just it was a really good experience. So
awesome.
Yeah. So in addition to Cons of Tarkir, you know, we're saying hello to Cons of Tarkir, which we'll talk about in a minute, but we also get to say goodbye to Standard. Are you somebody who is looking forward to new Standard, or are you going to miss what we're dealing with right now?
Well, it's kind of bittersweet because, as I said the last time I was on the show, I haven't really been happy with current Standard, just because, like, it hasn't been very diverse. It's just been sort of the same decks over and over again. Mono blue, mono black, Jund monsters, Esper control, just over and over again for months. And that's something I'm not going to miss. There are a lot of cards from Return to Ravnica that I am going to miss playing with, though, just because, like, I started playing Magic about 2 years ago. Return to Ravnica was my first pre-release.
Oh, wow.
And so I actually haven't played Standard, or at least not competitive Standard, in an environment that hasn't had Return to Ravnica in it. So that's going to be a little new for me. And so there are a couple of cards that I'm a little bit attached to, but I'll get over it. I'll find new cards that I like.
Well, what are you going to miss?
I mean, I'm going to miss Sphinx's Revelation. Not going to lie. Like, I played that card. I know a lot of people either love it or hate it. I'm definitely in the former camp. And I don't know. I opened one at my first pre-release and I was like, oh my God, it's my first mythic. I love this card. It's card advantage. It's awesome. And I've played it for 2 years now, and now I can only play it really in Modern, or I don't know, in Cube or whatever. And so I'm going to miss that. And I don't know. There are just, like, a lot of really good removal spells from Return to Ravnica, like Abrupt Decay, that I'm going to miss playing in Standard. But I don't know. I'm also really excited to see what Cons has to offer and what people build in the next couple weeks.
Are there any cards that are rotating out that you wish we saw more of, or that you feel didn't really get their time in the limelight?
Yeah, there are a couple cards that I thought were really cool and that I felt were a little underutilized, or that, like, people couldn't quite find the right shell for them. Like, I remember when Ralzarek was first previewed, I was like, that card looks kind of cool. I hope that I could do something with it, and then, like, nothing happened. Or, like, I really like Prime Speaker Zagana. Like, I was like, I really like card draw engines, and that seemed like a pretty good one. And I saw it in, like, a couple of decks. Like, I think there was, like, a Bant deck that used it at one point.
Yeah, it was called Prime Speaker Bant.
Right, but, like, it kind of had its moment, and it was never really, like, big or anything. It was just sort of like, oh, here's this really cool deck, and here are a bunch of other decks that beat it, so...
Well, I think part of the problem with Prime Speaker Bant, and I was one of the people that was very interested in Prime Speaker Bant. I know the problem for me was it was one of those decks that only showed up towards the end of rotation.
Right.
So I didn't have Restoration Angels. I didn't have the Zaganas. I didn't have the Sphinxes at the time. You know, I didn't have the money. I didn't want to invest in a deck that was going to rotate in 2 months anyways. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, it was also the curve was very strange where, you know, it didn't have like a smooth curve where like, you know, you'd get to like you didn't really have a lot of one drops, two drops. Like you have to get there to be able to get to Thragtusk, to get to Zagana, to get the angel, to get the engine going. And if you couldn't get there, it was very awkward.
Yeah.
But it did look like fun though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was very sad too. I was kind of hoping Duskmantle Seer would see some play.
Oh yeah, like that was a card that I kind of thought like, oh, maybe like Falconwrath Aristocrat is like the big flying four drop in this format. Maybe when that rotates, Duskmantle Seer will be good, and then it just wasn't.
Mm-hmm. That's the same with Exava. Like I was really, excited about Exava, and people sort of use a similar argument. They were like, well, as long as Hellrider isn't around, you know, as long as Hellrider's around, Exava won't see any play. And then Hellrider rotated. And I was like, all right, guys, let's get Exava in here. And then she never came. And there were quite a few cards that people said, if only this was gone, it would be there. And that didn't happen.
Yeah. Another card that I kind of wished saw more play in Standard was Deathrite Shaman. It's because like it was so good in Modern that it got banned, and it's still really good in Legacy, like in the Esper Deathblade decks and the Jund decks. Like it's a really powerful card, but I just kind of wished it could do more in Standard. It just kind of never found a home.
Mm-hmm. Even the decks that like I remember I played Standard Dredge for a month or two, and they had tried to Conley and Ari had tried it in there, and even it was okay in there, but it just didn't have the same oomph like it did in other formats. Like you're right, it just never made the same splash.
And maybe it was because, you know, it's best when you can take advantage of things like Fetchlands, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. But we'll never know because it's going out as the Fetchlands are coming in.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I was really looking forward to I'm a Black Mage, of course, and I was kind of hoping for some Liliana of the Dark Realms and Corrupt action.
Oh, interesting.
And then we had that, you know, a couple of weeks where Urborg was legal, and I was like, maybe? And then Mono Black that we've known and loved for so long has been around and so dominant that people just didn't want to, you know, break it. So, but I would have loved to have, like, corrupted for 9 or something.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
or, you know, maybe use Liliana's minus to, like, kill a Thassa. Like, that would have been cool. But,
yeah,
I was very sad to see that go. I'm trying to think what Obsidot. I'm very sad to see Obsidot go.
Yeah, that was a really fun card for me to play with. Like, I played with that a bunch.
Yeah, that was one of those cards that was a win not only in terms of power, but just flavor. And just, we haven't seen anything really like it. Like, just that constant blink ability. Like, it really, that was one of those cards that people had to have an answer for. Like, you know, for a while there, everything was sorcery speed. And I remember people would ask themselves, how are you going to deal with Obsidot? And I love a card that can make you rethink your deck like that, where it's like, you know, yeah, my deck's really great, but what am I going to do about this? And if you don't have an answer for it, it's game on. It's great.
Yeah, I remember, like, there was one time, I think I was playing in GP Phoenix, and I was playing, I was playing Esper, and my opponent was playing, like, a junk mid-range deck with Obsidot, and I just, like, I didn't have any main deck answers to it, and so I literally sat there and hoped that my opponent would mess up so that I could win the match, because I was like, there is no way that I can deal with this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it came down to. And especially like when you would get into like interactions with like Whip of Erebos.
Right.
Yeah. It was just silly. And I mean that in a really good way. I was also really surprised that Taysa didn't see some play. Like, I mean, either like in a Reanimator shell or something. That was a card I really liked.
Yeah.
So, but I was a big fan. I love Tristani as well. I'm surprised Tristani didn't see any play. I hate to say that I blame the Standard format, but I really do. I really feel like if Devotion wasn't so good, maybe people would have, you know, tried something new or something. Like, I get a little mad when I think about it.
Yeah, I remember like the format was a lot more diverse a year ago than it has been in the past year. Like it seemed like the Innistrad block, Return to Ravnica block standard, it just seemed like any color combination was viable. Though Thragtusk was really good. It's like you didn't have to have Thragtusk to win. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, especially when Boros Reckoner came out and then was the foil to Thragtusk.
Right.
Do you think that we can go back to that in this coming standard? Like, do you think we might go back to a time where, you know, three colors is good again, or even two colors is good again, and we're not leaning on devotion so much?
I'm honestly not sure. Like, I've been throwing around a lot of, like, three-color deck ideas, but I have to actually play with the cards in order to see if the mana is good enough to support some of the ideas that I have.
Mm-hmm. I know Reed Duke did a post today on Channel Fireball, and he was talking about devotion decks after rotation, and maybe it's just the ones that he listed, but they didn't seem very good, where he was like, okay, Mono Black is losing this, but it gets this, and it just didn't, none of them really seemed like they're going to do okay afterwards.
Right, because like, the whole devotion mechanic sort of fed off of the hybrid mana symbols in the Return to Ravnica block cards. Mm-hmm. So like, you don't have things like Frostburn Weird in your mono blue deck, or Tidebinder Mage from M14, which is rotating out. Or like, if you're trying to do like a red devotion deck, then you don't have Boros Reckoner anymore. So all of these decks sort of have to find new pieces, and sometimes the pieces just aren't there. Like, this is a format where it doesn't seem like there are a ton of multiples of mana symbols of a single color in a lot of the permanents. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that too many of these cards are going to lend themselves to a devotion strategy.
Mm-hmm. It's also kind of ironic that, you know, the devotion decks are losing so much, while at the same time the removal isn't going to be very good. Right. And the only board wipe, I mean, there's End Hostilities, Anger of the Gods is still out there, but it's like, it seems like a really good time to have a devotion deck that fills the board and you count all the mana symbols, because that was one of the problems with mono green devotion, was all it takes is a Supreme Verdict.
Yep.
And everything is gone. But with that being out of the way, this would be a good time for those decks to shine.
Yeah, and mono green is still pretty viable because a lot of the pieces for it are Theros block cards, mm-hmm. like Arbor Colossus. You still have Courser of Kruphix. You still have Sylvan Caryatid.
Nissa
now, exactly. You still have Pelucranos. So all of those cards are still going to be there. Like, mono green is more or less a block constructed deck.
Mm-hmm. Would you play mono green?
I've actually been playing it for the past couple weeks just at FNMs, because I haven't been that excited about the format. So I've like, okay, I have these cards. Like, I just got a playset of Nissas. So I was like, okay, let me take these up for a spin. And it's been fun. The lack of removal is something that gets to me a little bit when I play mono green. But I've been doing pretty decently at FNMs, especially because like at my FNMs, there's a lot of mono red. And I feel like the mono green deck stabilizes really well against that kind of deck.
That's actually a good choice then for the new standard, because some people like to think that going into an undecided standard or an unsettled standard, that a lot of people will take the aggro route, and because that's sort of a tried and true, you know, deck. And if your deck can hold up against that, that's a good choice.
Right. I'm actually a little skeptical about mono red though. I think I've mentioned on the show before, I learned how to play Magic from a mono red player, who plays a lot of like mono red creature decks and burn decks also. And he and I were talking a couple days ago, and he basically like put together the shell of like a mono red creature deck. And he was like, I'm not sure that the pieces are here. Like you might need to splash another color or two, like build like a Mardu deck or something like that in order to get like a strong enough creature base for your deck. And that was something that worried him because, like I said, we're a little unsure of how good mana is in this format yet.
Mm-hmm. I think mono black aggro could be really scary because you've got the Gnarlhide. Mm-hmm. Now you've got this guy in Khan's of Tarkir, the 1/1 black. You could go turn 3, something as silly as Master of the Feasts, which I've had people use against me. It's very easy to curve out with mono black, and especially when you throw in Thoughtseize, Hero's Downfall. I mean, it gets gross.
Yeah, and there's a really good black one drop too that keeps coming back, right? I think it's called Bloodsoaked Champion.
Oh, that's the one I was thinking of. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So you put all those together, maybe like a Spiteful Return. Things can get pretty dumb.
Yeah, definitely.
So I wouldn't be surprised if black was the new aggro. So let's talk about cons. So I'm trying to think about how the lore goes here. So if I understand this correctly, Tarkir is the realm that Sarkhan Vol is from.
Yep.
Now, I was not around when Sarkhan made his first foray into magic, so I'm just learning about him for the first time. So so I'm trying to understand why we're back to Tarkir. So maybe you can fill in the holes here. So do we know why he's back?
I think he's looking for Ugin.
Okay. That's
what I could gather from. I actually attended the world building panel at PAX this year. And from what I could gather, he and Sorin are both on Tarkir because they're looking for Ugin and they don't realize that Ugin is dead.
Okay. But I'm under the impression from the flavor text that they do find out.
Yeah. Okay. Eventually.
Okay. Now, who exactly is Ugin? Because I wasn't around for, I believe he was prominent in the Eldrazi storyline.
Yeah, he was. I actually wasn't playing at that point either, and I'm a super Melvin, so I'm not really up on my lore.
Okay.
But he was some sort of a powerful dragon, and so Sarkhan, who is really into dragons, he's a dragon shaman. Like he comes from. No, he's really into dragons.
Yeah, I just don't know why.
I don't know. It's like dinosaurs. Like dragons are their dinosaurs. Like there's dragon bones everywhere on like all the fetchland art and everything.
Okay.
But I don't know. I think he was really like taken with Ugin, I guess, and wanted to, I don't know, meet him, learn for. I have no idea.
Okay. So from what I gather, so while you were chatting, I went and looked it up, and from what I understand, he's a spirit dragon who has an understanding of colorless magic.
Okay.
Which is very interesting, and he was also a planeswalker. And he lured them to Zendikar, and through a chain of events that involved this ghost flame, they unleashed the Eldrazi.
Okay.
But it's very interesting, and maybe, I mean, I understand people said that we're going to be going back in time in this block.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe, now, from what I understand, the Eldrazi are out. Like, they're raising hell in Zendikar.
Yep.
Maybe they're trying to go back in time to prevent the Eldrazi from hatching or coming out.
I have no idea.
Because they're pretty hard to deal with. So maybe if they could fix it so the Eldrazi were never released, that might be a good thing.
Yeah, who knows?
Now, do you like Sarkhan as a character? Like, the whole hears voices kind of cray, tortured man? Like, do you like him?
I don't know. Like, I don't get super into the magic characters.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, like, the one character that I really identified with was Elspeth. Because, like, throughout, like, the whole Theros block, like, her storyline was pretty interesting to me. Just because I really love it when Wizards promotes, like, strong female characters. So I got into that a little bit. With Sarkhan, like, there's so much backstory that I would need to read about him. And I just like, I wasn't playing during Shards. I wasn't playing during Zendikar. So I haven't really read up on it. It's something that I would be interested in, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Sure. So speaking of strong female characters, you actually tweeted this when you were at PAX that, so on Tarkir, there are these clans, and each of the clans has a leader known as a Khan, and of the five clans in Khans of Tarkir, three of them are female.
Yeah, exactly. That was so awesome.
And we have Anna Fenza of the Foremost, Narset Enlightened Master, and Sidisi Blood Tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they even said on the panel that this was an indication that they are committed to continuing this trend.
Yeah, exactly. That was really cool that they said that. It came up during the Q&A portion at the end. And I remember like there were a couple people who tweeted at me like after I tweeted that news out that were sort of like, well, why wouldn't they support female characters? Or like, why would they say that they wouldn't? Mm-hmm. And my response was sort of like, well, they were very emphatic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were basically saying that, like, they understand that women don't have it easy in gaming and they're going out of their way to support us. And that made me feel pretty good as a female consumer of their products, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say the art for each of those three is pretty awesome too. Like you're not seeing any like, you know, bikini male, you know, not really seeing any like unrealistic bodies. Well, Sidisi's of course, but that's a different story. Yeah. But you know, yeah, I mean, I feel like they were represented well and I hope that carries over into the eBooks when they come out.
Yeah, I actually really like Narset as a character. Like I was reading the Planeswalker's Guide to Tarkir just because I've started identifying pretty strongly with Jeskai. Like, mm-hmm. when Return to Ravnica came out and we had to pick our guilds, I was so undecided because I felt like there wasn't a single guild that really represented all the aspects of my personality. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Jeskai does a pretty good job of summing me up. So I've gotten pretty into that lore, and I actually like Narset a lot. She seems like a really cool character, and I don't know, they seem to imply in the little write-up about her that she might have a Planeswalker spark.
Ooh.
And so I don't know, I'm hopeful that we get a Narset Planeswalker by the end of the block.
That'd be very cool. I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
So there's five clans, and each of the clans has their own mechanics. So we have the Abzan, which is basically junk, which is white, black, green, mm-hmm. and they have a mechanic called Outlast. And from what I understand, that is a mechanic where you can tap the creature as a sorcery and pay a mana cost, and it puts a +1/+1 counter on them.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say from my experience playing at the pre-release at the Community Cup that was a little underwhelming, especially because it's sorcery speed.
Uh-huh.
There were a lot of times where I was torn between wanting to do something that turn and leveling that beast up. And I feel like it would have been much better as an instant, but it might have also been broken as an instant.
Yeah, that was my thought process also. The thing I like about Outlast, though, is that there are a lot of cards in Abzan, not only cards that get +1/+1 counters, but cards that put +1/+1 counters on things and cards that care about things that have +1/+1 counters on them. Mm. So it seems like the cards gel together really well. And so if you have a decent pool of Abzan cards, you might have a very synergistic deck, even if it is a little slow.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'm going to look for at the pre-release.
It's also helpful because it can help you transition into the late game where it's like you have a lot of little creatures. And the problem with green-white decks to a certain extent is they're really great at that early rush. But then like when they're up against mid-range decks or up against control decks, you still just have a bunch of 2/2s.
Mm-hmm.
But to have a deck like that where, like you said, you know, you have the choice to put counters on them or you have effects that can put counters on them, that's a really nice way to last longer in those games.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So the Jeskai, the clan that you said that you identify with, is Prowess.
Yep.
And from what I understand, that is if you play a non-creature spell, they get +1/+1 until end of turn.
Yep.
Okay. Do we like that?
I do like it. I like a lot of the creatures. I'm a little skeptical about how good the enablers are for them,
mm-hmm.
Both in standard and in limited, but it's the kind of thing where I'm going to have to play with the set to figure out how good it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hopeful, though.
Mm-hmm. I worry a little bit about that clan, and I admit I don't have a lot of experience with those colors, but it almost feels like the Jeskai are being pulled in two different directions, where a lot of the cards, because it is blue, red, white, and that is oftentimes a control combo, a lot of the cards seem control-y, but then you have creatures, and it's like, well, like, the creatures are aggro-y, but they get bigger when you play spells, and I just worry that you're being pulled in two different directions.
Yeah, that was a concern that I had also.
Yeah. So the Sultai Brood is the clan that I associate the most with, and their mechanic is Delve, which I love, love, love. And Delve is a returning mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
So Delve was a run in a previous set, and this is one where if you exile a card from your graveyard, you get a colorless mana that you can put towards the cast of that spell.
Yep.
And there are certain cards, a lot of the cards admittedly are kind of expensive, mm-hmm. but a lot of times, again, when you're in a later game, you have a pretty full graveyard, it gives you something really nice to do with that. And I know from my experience, it gets pretty gross.
Mm-hmm. Delve is the mechanic that I'm actually most excited about for Constructed, just because I think it plays so well with fetch lands, and fetch lands are going to be everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be really easy to just, like, crack a couple of fetch lands and take, like, a couple of mana off of the cost of whatever you're playing. Like, I think that's going to be pretty strong.
Yeah. And I think it's something that's also easy to splash, too, where it's, like, typically when you have graveyard-centric cards, they typically only do well in graveyard-centric decks.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you know, when Splinter Fright was a thing, it's like, well, unless you wanted to mill yourself, you didn't need to play Splinter Fright or Whip of Erebos. It's like, you know, you have to have something to whip back.
Right.
But, you know, filling your graveyard is something that we all do throughout the game. Why not have something to do with those cards? And I know there was a card called Treasure Cruise. I can see a blue deck using that, like just your average blue control deck. They're gonna have a pile of nothing to do in their graveyard and might as well exile those things and have fun with it. So
yeah, I feel the same way about Murderous Cut, which is like the premium removal spell in the format. Like it's 4 and a black to destroy a target creature at instant speed, which might be playable even without the delve cost and limited, but like pretty much any black deck will have like at least a couple of cards to exile from their graveyard. So you could easily play this for a single black.
Mm-hmm. It's also a great strategy to think about, sort of like Slaughter Pact was, where like, you know, you would look at their lands and be like, oh, they've only got one black mana. I'm going to go ahead and cast this. And then they delve for four. Mm-hmm. It really is going to make people be on their toes a little bit more of going, do they have this card? Do they? Because that's surprise removal, you know?
Yeah.
The Mardu Horde, that is red, white, and black. Their mechanic is Raid. And that is where if you already attacked that turn and then you play the card, it does something. Which seems like it goes along with it. Like from my experience, Mardu is the aggressive clan. So odds are you're going to be attacking anyways. So it doesn't seem like it's a stretch to make it work.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the cards will just sort of give you a bonus if you attacked already, but they're fine and playable as it is.
Yeah. And the last one is the Timur Frontier. Timur, right? Try to say that one three times fast. Timur Frontier, Timur Frontier, Timur Frontier. I did it. The Timur Frontier, that is, their mechanic is they are red, blue, green, and their mechanic is Ferocious. Mm-hmm. And that is where if you have a creature with power 4 or greater, then I guess an additional effect happens on a spell.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
I was initially a little bit skeptical about it because I was like, okay, how often are you going to have a creature with power 4 or greater? And so I was looking at the cards and they're pretty efficiently costed, actually. Like there are a couple of like under-costed 4-power creatures, and that's a thing that I really like in limited in general, like really efficient creatures or creatures that pass the vanilla test, as our friends over at Limited Resources would say. So yeah, like I'm feeling pretty good about Timur. Like it seems like a pretty good like mid-range strategy. I'm a little concerned, like I guess if removal weren't so like conditional in this format, then I would be a little more concerned about the Ferocious mechanic, just because like you have to have a creature in order to get that effect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of like Mardu in that like the effect is just sort of bonus, and sometimes in some cases like you'll just get the creature and the creature is fine by itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like each of the mechanics has a drawback to it, and I agree with you about Ferocious, where having to have something in play to make a good spell better, you know, is kind of worrisome. Where it's like with Outlast, okay, so the weakness there is that you're taking a turn to do something. You know, with Prowess, you have to be casting spells to make it better. You know, Raid, I would say, is the one that really doesn't have much of a weakness, because it really feels like, okay, so you get the trigger may or may not be good, but whatever, you know. Whereas with Ferocious, you need that you need to not only have a creature, but it needs to be a big creature, and it's just I don't know about it.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that. You know, the people who played with Timur at the pre-release I was at the Community Cup, they didn't seem too impressed with it. The 5 cards from this set that you are most looking forward to, and I know you were kind of more vague. You wanted to break it down to like cycles.
Well, I did want to talk about the charms, just because I think all 5 of them are excellent in their own ways.
Mm-hmm. Fire away.
They all have really relevant abilities. And I mean, some of them reminded me a little bit of like a little too much of the charms from Return to Ravnica. Like I remember when I first saw the preview of Jeskai Charm, I was kind of like, this seems like Azorius Charm and Boros Charm just kind of like stapled together. But they are really good. Like, I think these are going to be really high picks in limited and pretty popular and constructed. Like, I've already seen a couple of people brewing like Jeskai Burn decks.
Oh no.
Jeskai Charm. Like that's the deck that I'm most excited to test. in the next couple weeks. And I've seen a couple of brews of like teamer mid-range decks mm-hmm. that have teamer charm in them. And like all the modes of these charms seem like they would be relevant in the format. And so I'm just really excited. I like good utility spells.
Yeah, there's been talk of teamer being the new Jund monsters, where, you know, yeah. Jund monsters would be phasing out and we would be replacing with teamer. Now, when you say you're testing Jeskai Burn, are you mm-hmm. testing to play it or are you testing against it?
A little bit of both, probably.
Hallie Angela Santo, are you playing a burn deck?
I don't know. Like, I like playing tempo decks. And so I really like sort of like playing a couple of like small resilient creatures with good abilities, and then just like holding up burn and holding up like disruption. So that's sort of like my favorite style of play. But I don't know. I'll see what I feel like doing. Like, one of my friends and I are planning on just like building and or proxying up a whole bunch of decks after the pre-release, and just testing and seeing what we want to play at the first couple FNMs. So that'll give us a better idea of the format.
You know, I was going to send you a gift to celebrate your new arrival, but now I hope he poops in your shoes. Burn deck. I thought we were friends. So what cards are you most excited about? Give me a couple of them.
Okay, so I would say that the creature that I'm most excited about for Limited is actually a creature that I saw you playing at the Community Cup.
Okay.
It's Icefeather Aven.
Yes.
That card, like, as soon as I saw that, I was just like, oh my god, like, that's a card that I want to draft all the time.
Yeah, that was one of the few cards where I really looked at it, because I wasn't around when Morph was a thing, and Morph is the big returning mechanic here, and I admit I didn't really know what to do, where I was like, do I play this for two? Do I morph it for three? And that's definitely one of those cards where if you can afford to morph it and spring it on somebody, it's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Like, I really love, like, bounce effects in Limited. Like, I recently drafted Adam Staborski's Popper Cube at PAX, and I drafted Manowar, and I had never actually played with Manowar before, but I had heard about how awesome it is, and I was just like, oh my god, I love creatures that bounce things. So I'm really excited about Icefeather Aven.
That card gave me fits in the stipulation cube. So Helene had managed to draft me like a Show and Tell Reanimator deck, and yeah. I was going to do Show and Tell Emrakul.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that Manowar can still bounce an Emrakul. Mm-hmm. And once I realized that Dave Humphreys had bounce spells, I was like, well, no Emrakul for me. So so I'm a little bitter about bounce spells right now. But but you're right. That card is scary good.
Yeah, I like it. It's a Manowar. And it also flies. Like, that's awesome. It's evasive. It's like everything that I want in like a small creature for Limited. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah. So one card that I'm excited about is Altar of the Brood. That is an artifact for one mana. And mm-hmm. anytime a permanent, let me get this right here. Whenever another permanent enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent puts the top card of their library into their graveyard. If you get that on turn one, it gets stupid because play a land, mill one. Play a creature, mill one.
Yeah. Have you seen like the silly mill brew that's been running around in Standard?
Oh.
So people are talking about like putting Altar of the Brood in a deck that also has Midnight Guard, Ornithopter, and Retraction Helix. Because what you do is you play Retraction Helix targeting your Midnight Guard, and your Midnight Guard untaps whenever another creature comes into play. Mm-hmm. So you just like you play Midnight Guard, you put Refraction Helix on it, you play an Ornithopter for free, your Midnight Guard untaps, and then you tap it to bounce the Ornithopter, and then you play the Ornithopter again, and every time it keeps coming into play, your opponent mills one. So apparently this is the deck that my boyfriend wants to build Standard right now and like bring to the Lady Planeswalker Society for Standard Nights, but I don't know. It's silly. Like, I don't even like 3-card combos. 4-card combos are just, like, way too out there for me. But some people like silly decks that do things like that, so.
I'm into it. I can totally see the Facebook post now. Tifa's like, you know, we've noticed that attendance at the Lady Planeswalkers event has taken a steep decline. Does anyone know the reason for this? And Robert's just like, that sounds like fun. But no, I played this. So after our event was over, after we scrubbed out of the pre-release at the Community Cup, we were still able to play. Like, our computers still had it on there. So we played cons all day long. And I got to play against Bjorn, and I was playing Sultai, and I dropped that on turn one. I had him down to like 15, 14 cards just from this card alone.
Oh, wow.
Because I was just doing my thing, where it was making a creature, doing this, and that card gets gross fast. So I was very excited about Altar of the Brood, and I hope I get it again.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. So what else are you excited about?
Let's see. I already talked about Murderous Cut.
Mm-hmm.
One of the cards that was really intriguing to me was Ride Down.
Mm.
So let me see if I could find the text of it so I can read it to you.
Isn't that the one where you destroy a blocker?
Yes. So it's a red and a white for an instant. Destroy target blocking creature. Creatures that were blocked by that creature, this combat gained trample until end of turn. So basically, if let's say that I have a 4/4 and you block with a 2/2. So if I were to ride down your 2/2, then it would be destroyed and the 4/4 would gain trample. So it was basically as if it were never blocked, if I'm understanding this correctly. And so it would, so the 4 damage would get through even though it was blocked.
Wow.
I don't know. Like, that's like, I keep like looking at this card and thinking like, is that actually what it does? Because that sounds like it's way too good.
The art is really nice too.
Yeah. It's Darken. Yeah. I mean, Darken does great art. Yeah.
And even that flavor text, I will wash you from my hooves. I need to say that at an event sometime.
Yeah.
No, that's really cool. I like that. So the other one that I picked for one of my favorites is, of course, Empty the Pits.
Yeah, that's a sweet one.
I am a Delve girl. The minute I saw that, I was in. So they're calling it Entreat the Zombies. So it costs 4 black and then 2x, and you delve, and you put x 2/2 black zombie creature tokens onto the battlefield tapped. But that x is delve, so it's stuff you delve from your graveyard. The thing that really makes this so strong is the fact that it's an instant. So you can do that on the end of somebody's turn when they're tapped out and be like, all right, I'm going to make 4 or 5 2/2 zombies. You've either got something to deal with this or you don't. And then you can swing in for a bunch on your turn. I think this card's going to be scary. I can't wait to play with this.
Yeah, like it's basically like they either have Bile Blight or they're dead.
Yep. Yeah, because they can't, because you're doing it at the end of their turn, so they can't Anger the Gods it. They can't.
They can't Drown in Sorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think this is going to be, I know Shaheen Sirvani had posted a Sultai control list. I don't know if this made the cut, but I think it would make a really great finisher. Again, because control decks have so much in their graveyard, put it to use to make 15 zombies, you know?
Yeah.
Live the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you like?
Well, obviously Sarkhan. Like, Sarkhan is awesome. I was really excited when they spoiled him at the PAX party, just because, like, Red Planeswalkers don't really have a great history.
Mm-hmm.
They've had, like, there have been a couple of Chandras that people haven't really been happy with. There was Tybalt, who was a little wacky, and Sarkhan just looks pretty awesome. Like, turning into a dragon, like, that's flavorful, and it's great. Like, for, like, I could see this as a good, like, a curve topper for, like, an aggressive red deck. Not necessarily a mono red deck, but just, like, an aggressive creature-based deck.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you think that Sarkhan compares to Stormbreath Dragon? Because the main argument that I'm seeing is that it's not Stormbreath Dragon, and then if you have a choice to play Stormbreath Dragon, you're not going to want to play Sarkhan. Is that true?
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. Like, I'd have to do some testing and compare them. Like, I guess, like, Sarkhan has more modes and more different, like, abilities that could be relevant. Like, dealing 4 damage to target creature, that's also pretty cool. It doesn't have protection from white like Stormbreath Dragon, so there are, like, I could see pluses and minuses either way.
Mm-hmm. One card that I'm excited about, along with a lot of other people, is Butcher of the Horde.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
Oh, my God, a 5/4 for 4? Like, and I have to say, I did get to play a Mardu deck when I was in Seattle, and it was surprisingly easy to get the mana for that. Like, it was not hard at all to get that thing out on turn 4.
Yeah.
And it wasn't hard to have things, especially in a fast Mardu deck, to feed to it.
Yeah,
wasn't
you
a problem.
Just, like, Yeah, you could just like immediately sack something and give it haste.
I have to say, one thing I don't want to see is there were people on Twitter that were like, you should pair it with Goblin Rabble Master. No, no, no. Shut it down right now. It's like putting ketchup on steak. No, I do not want to see any of you twat waffles on an SCG open stream making your little goblins and sacking it to Butcher the Horde. Absolutely not.
We're going to see a lot of that, I'm sure.
No, that makes me so sad. What's next on your list?
Let's see. So I really like Mantis Rider. Just because, like, I was kind of hoping for a Lightning Angel reprint, but it doesn't look like there are angels on this plane.
What is up with that?
I don't know. Like, Heather's going to be really sad about that. So, like, 3/3 Flying Vigilance Haste for 3 mana. Like, I'm totally on board with that. Like, it's really good in, like, the sort of tempo shell that I'm thinking of building. Plus, I get to make really good puns about it being a praying mantis. Like, P-R-A-Y-I-N-G, because it's from the monk clan. I don't know. My puns aren't as good as Ellis.
I mean, you could build off of that and do like a wing and a prayer kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's totally fine. Or you could play this and sing Living on a Prayer.
Yeah, who knows?
Go for it. No, I like the art too. The art is pretty.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's very cool. My fourth choice is Rakshasa Death Dealer. I'm very much a Golgari girl, and you know, that was the card that my baby daddy KYT spoiled, and it's black and green, 2/2, and you can pump this thing for a black and a green. It gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Black and green, you regenerate it. It's a good early game card. It's a great blocker if you need it. It's a great attacker if you need it. Good mana sink in the late game. Pretty scary. I like this.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Lotla Troll.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one more. What else do you have high hopes for? Would you like to see?
Let's see. I guess Savage Knuckleblade also looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, it has a lot of abilities, and, like, it's the kind of card that's going to be really difficult to deal with in Standard, just because you can return it to your hand at instant speed.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So it's I could read it just because it's... Yeah. Text on one card. So it's a 4/4 for teamer, so green, blue, red. It has 3 abilities. The green ability, 2 and a green, is Savage Knuckleblade gets +2/+2 until end of turn. You can only activate this once each turn. The blue ability is 2 and a blue, return it to its owner's hand. Or if you pay a red, it gains haste until end of turn.
Jesus.
So we're gonna see probably some situations in Standard. Like, it's like what we were talking about with the teamer monsters deck that could come up. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a card that deck is going to want, because you can just sort of like return it to your hand if it gets targeted with a removal spell, and then all of a sudden you can just like play it, pump it, and give it haste, and all of a sudden it's coming at you from out of nowhere.
I love the green ability. They only say activate this once per turn, as if just having a 6/6, you know, is a big deal. Like, oh, who's gonna want just a 6/6? Like, this card is scary. Return it to hand, that's nuts.
Yeah,
very hard to deal with.
Plus, like, if you have other cards that will, like, grant it other abilities, or that will grant it, like, higher power or toughness, like, this could get incredibly scary.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want to be on the other side of this card. The last card that I was excited about actually is kind of one, well, I mean, obviously Sidisi, but I want to go outside my comfort zone a little bit here. Grim Haruspex.
Okay, which one was that one?
That is a black morph creature. So its normal casting cost is 2 and a black. It has a morph cost of 1 black to flip it. And whenever another non-token creature you control dies, you draw a card.
Best 3 ones in Magic.
Draw. I know. It kind of reminds me of like aristocrat type shenanigans. Like, especially we were talking about Butcher of the Horde. You know, you could pair this with Butcher of the Horde and you start feeding that guy creatures and drawing cards at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I love that sort of synergy. And she also has really great flavor text. I mean, she says, "We all want to know what's going on in someone else's head. I simply open it up and look." How awesome is that? And the art, she's literally just playing with brains. Like, just, it's a normal day, just playing with brains.
Yeah, I love her armor too.
Yeah, I think she's really well done. A 3/2. I love this card.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
Yeah. So, were there any other cards you were looking forward to?
I don't know. We covered a lot of them.
Yeah.
I don't know, Rattleclaw Mystic, like good old fashioned like ramp card, seems pretty awesome. Plus, like with the morph cost, you can flip it and get 3 mana instead of 2 instead of 1, which is pretty cool. Yeah, there are a lot of cards that I'm looking forward to in this set, mostly for limited, but also for constructed.
Now, one thing that we learned when we were playing with these is that Morph has made it to where you're probably going to want 18 lands in your deck.
Yep, I'm hearing that from everyone.
Yeah, because it is so important that you do hit that three drop, and if you don't, or you do hit the mana to be able to transform your cards, and it's super awkward when you don't. So that was something I didn't take into account. And I'm also kind of new to, and Morph, I think, is a lot like Scry, where if you, it definitely gets better with your skill level. Like if
Right.
you're a really skilled player and you know not only when to morph but when to flip over, that's going to take some getting used to.
Yeah, it's something I'm a little nervous about just because I've never played with Morph before, but I'm looking forward to the challenge of the pre-release.
I've also heard on Twitter that you have to, like, when the game ends, you have to flip over anything face down that you have.
Yeah, or whenever it changes zones. So if it goes back to your hand on top of your library or into your graveyard, you have to reveal it to your opponent.
That's a big deal. So,
Yeah.
we always have the what the fuck section where there's a card that we just don't get. We don't know why it's here, we don't really like it, or we're just confused by it. What was your WTF choice?
I had a couple actually. So one card that I was wondering about was Erase. Just because, like, remember on our last show when we were talking about like back to nature and like why is this
Yeah.
here to like rain on our enchantment parade? Like, it's like we already have back to nature. We already have like so much enchantment hate in Theros block. Why do we need another enchantment hate card?
Especially because there's not even that many enchantments in this set or very good ones.
Yeah, exactly.
It
I don't really
does,
get it.
yeah, it does seem like they're trying to move very quickly into the next block, where it's like, all right, let's just brush this under the rug here and focus on cons, and that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. My what the fuck choice was Ugin's Nexus. Like, it just seems
Yeah.
so narrow. And so, so it's an artifact that costs five, which you could do a lot for 5 mana. It's a legendary artifact. If a player would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead. Who's taking extra turns? Who has that kind of, who's doing that? And
Commander
then
players? I don't know.
that could be. And then if Ugin's Nexus would be put into a graveyard from the battlefield, instead you exile it and you get an extra turn.
Yeah, that's kind of neat.
I guess I just don't. It kind of reminds me of like something like Spine of Ishsa or like the Ichor Wellspring, like kind of useless artifacts that maybe do nice things, but I don't really get it.
Yeah, I don't really see myself playing this card.
Okay. I can see Robert doing something with it, like
Don't know. He likes wacky cards, but I think this is not quite up his alley
so it's too
even.
wacky for Robert.
Yeah. Or
Even he
like
has his standards.
not the right kind of wacky.
Okay. Were there other cards you were confused by?
Not necessarily confused. Like I'm a little skeptical about the new Sorin, just because he seems so similar to Sworn Lord of Innistrad.
Yeah.
Like his first and second abilities are basically like the same as his first and second abilities on the previous card, except like flip-flopped and a little bit altered. And so it's not that I don't like it just seems a little unoriginal to me.
I actually felt it was kind of the opposite. Sorin, Lord of Innistrad seemed like a card that was meant for more like mid-range or control strategies, because you could make the tokens and sort of create an army out of nowhere. But I feel like with Sorin's Solemn Visitor, his plus one, it gives creatures, +1/+0 and lifelink until end of turn. You kind of need to have creatures already out for that. I
Yeah.
feel like that Sorin is more something that belongs in a Mardu deck or like an aggro deck where you might not have put Lord of Innistrad in an aggro deck right away. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, and in that kind of deck, like you're pretty much never going to use his ultimate. Like the game should be over before you get to that turn.
Yeah, whereas Lord of Innistrad, I mean, you could kind of do the same thing, but that ultimate of his was really good. So pre-release plans. Now I know we talked about how we're not really able to do like the four, five, six per weekend like we used to. Are you
I don't know.
doing?
I'm gonna give it a try just because like well, it's very conditional. I've signed up for 5 pre-releases.
Five?
Yeah. So one at midnight on Friday, two on Saturday, and two on Sunday. I'm not sure that I'm going to make it to all of them just because we do have a new puppy. We signed up for the pre-releases before we adopted the puppy. And so now we're sort of like, okay, like, can we take him to the store with us? Like, can we get anyone to watch him? So we may not end up going to all of them, but I'm really hoping that I can, because every time there's a set like this where there are several factions, I like to try and play as all of them just so I can get the most information about what the limited environment is like. And so plus, like, I really want to acquire a lot of cards from this set. Like, the more pre-releases I go to, the more packs I open, and the higher my chances are of opening fetch lands, both like in my pools and in my prize packs. So I'm really looking forward to going to a bunch of them.
You would like one of our local game stores. We have an event here called a stamina event.
I think you told me about that before.
Yeah, where they tend to run on Sundays, where it's like, you know, so if you can make it through the weekend, you get to play in this event. And, like, I can just see you showing up all, you know, haggard, in your sweatpants, gum in your hair. And you're like, I'm ready. Your eyes are so wide, you're not even blinking. Well, you are more, you know, enduring than I am. I'm doing one on Saturday at 10:30 a.m. because I need sleep, and I'm doing another one Sunday at 11 a.m. because, again, I like sleep.
Right.
So while you're having, like, you know, Red Bull infused directly into your bloodstream, I will be sleeping nicely in my bed. And you said you were going to try one of every clan?
Yeah. We actually don't sign up until we get to the store, so we tried to get there, like, at least half an hour early, because they have sign up sheets at check-in. But I'm hoping to get one of every clan, just because, like I said, I want to get sort of a sampler of everything.
Mm-hmm. I definitely want to try Junk. I want to try Azban, because I didn't get to, and I really feel like there's a lot of good. I kept opening good Azban cards, so I feel like that's God's way of saying you should play this. So I think I'll try that on Saturday. And then Sunday, I want to give Sultai another try, because I read LSV's set review, and I definitely picked cards I probably shouldn't have. And now that I'm a little smarter about it, I definitely want to give it another go. So I do feel like it's a good clan. I just didn't feel like I had the right pieces in it to make it a smooth plan. So I'd like to give it another go.
Right. And, like, one thing that you have to remember, I think Chris Van Meter wrote about this in his last article, that there is overlap between the clans with, like, if you pick an enemy color pair, you can pretty much be in two clans. Mm-hmm. And so that's a strategy that I'm going to keep in mind when I'm pre-releasing.
Yeah. I will say one good thing about cons, though, is the mana fixing is glorious. Like, I can honestly say that in the games that I played on Sunday, I didn't lose to mana fixing. I might have not had enough mana, but it was never due to, like, specific colors of mana. Like, everything I had, and between the banners and everything else, I could cast anything I wanted to.
Awesome.
So don't let the mana symbols fool you. Everything's pretty easy to land.
Okay, that's
good.
That's good to know, just because, like, when I was playing, Return to Ravnica Limited, I was fairly new to Magic, and so I wasn't that good at building mana bases at that point. And I feel like all of the decks I built during that time were alternately, like, too greedy or just, like, I don't know, too cautious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was always either, like, playing two colors and, like, not having enough playables, or, like, trying to play four colors. And so, like, I'm hoping that I find a better balance, and I'm confident that I will this time.
Yeah, like I said, I was opening at least one or two banners in every pack. I usually didn't put more than one banner in the deck. So between the one banner and then, you know, there's the comes into play tapped lands that gives you a life. Those were helpful. And then you have the three color lands that come into play tapped. I didn't even open any fetches, so just those alone and basic lands, I was fine. I really didn't have a problem.
Awesome. Yeah, like, I think one banner is probably the way to go in this format.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget that you can crack the banner to draw a card.
Yep, they're kind of like the clue stones from Dragon's Pass.
I did not know that, and I made a mistake on stream, and everybody told me. So. Now, outside of the pre-releases, are there any other Magic events that you're going to in the near future?
That's kind of up in the air right now. Like, I had thought about going to GPLA, but I have a wedding to go to that weekend. So I unfortunately won't be able to make it to that. But I am hoping to go to a couple of PTQs, once the next season starts up, and do a lot of, cons limited.
Are you looking forward to the pre-PTQs at all?
Are those starting already, or?
I believe they start in December.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was talking about like the October and November season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, I really don't have anything to look forward to. I mean, like, I have my F&Ms. There's a Win a Black Lotus in October, but it's standard. Everything around me is standard for like the next 2 months. Standard or sealed, mostly standard. I'm out of vacation time, so really out of vacation time after this past weekend, so I can't go anywhere. So with the exception of the pre-PTQs, I'm pretty grounded for the rest of the year. So it's game day I'm looking forward to, the pre-release, of course, but that's about it. There's an event in Illinois on a Sunday, but I'm not sure I want to do it. It's like, you know, win a foil Snapcaster, you know, win a play set of foil Snapcasters. It's a modern event, but yeah. I don't know, the traveling on a Sunday, I'm not really a big fan of.
Yeah.
I may skip
Yeah,
that.
I'm actually, like, I'm thinking about getting into playing Magic online more, honestly. Just because, like, I've only really used it to play Limited. Like, I've done a couple of drafts, and that's about it. But the more I think about it, the more I think I could benefit a lot more from just playing more Constructed online, like maybe investing in a modern deck, investing in a legacy deck, things like that, and just like grinding games. And so that's something that I may look into in the next couple months.
Cool. Well, I look forward to seeing you online. I've been popping on a bit more myself and I'm trying to do the same thing as you, or I'm trying to supplement, you know, the practice online with the practice I get in person, because I really do want to come out of the gate strong next year for GPs and be good.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed having you on the show again, and I'm sure my listeners have as well. But if they still don't know where to find you, or if they still don't know how to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
So I'm on Twitter at HalCanSan, that's HalCanSan, and I'm on Tumblr at magicandrealism.tumblr.com.
Okay. Well, it has been lovely having you back here, and I look forward to more pictures of Kirby and more of your wonderful blog posts, and hopefully I get to see you sometime next year.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
You're welcome. You do know I'm having a Pro Tour slumber party next year.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. I'm excited.
I'm just saying, you better bring an air mattress and some Mall Madness, because we're going to have a good time.
Will do.
And if anybody's enjoyed what you've heard here on The Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show is available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review or some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at The Deck Tees. You can keep up with me at Original Estrus. And you can also email me personally at estrus@elitistrix.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Enjoy Cons of Tarkir. And please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye!